What's up, y'all? Summer's got a different tempo. Everything's a little looser, brighter. One plan turns into another. You hear something, you stay a little longer. Next thing you know, you're somewhere you didn't plan to be. It's those in-between moments. That's where the ideas hit. Conversations stretch out, little memories sneak up on you. And sometimes, it's just about what's in your hand. That color, that chill. The new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks. Guava and passion fruit flavors with mango pineapple flavored pearls. Yeah, that feels like summer before you even taste it. Funny how one small stop becomes the best part of the day. Start your summer rhythm with Starbucks. Try the new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks.
World with Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Batchelor. We're very pleased to be joined by Steve Yates of the America First Policy Institute, our man in Taiwan recently. He's now back in the United States. And we speak of the matters in Asia these last days because the very distinguished Elliot Abrams has published a blog post entitled, Did Prigozhin Just Save Taiwan? Subhead, Might the Revolt by Yevgeny Prigozhin and the Wagner Group, Grupa Wagnera in Russian, teach Xi Jinping the lesson that invasions are too uncertain and risky and lead him away from invading Taiwan. Steve, it's a privilege to speak to you of this matter because it's not just speculation. It's the question of what is Beijing thinking right now after the visit of Antony Blinken? It's more opaque than usual. We're told that Janet Yellen, the Secretary of the Treasury, is outbound for China, that meaning the opacity will deepen as to what the U.S. believes is China's intention. Do we establish trade and investment with a country that's about to invade one of our allies, Taiwan, and disrupt the economies of all of East Asia? Elliot Abrams asked the question, what is to learn from Prigozhin? What are your first thoughts at this controversial matter?
Well, first, I do think that there is a great deal of unfolding uncertainty in Russia's standing. The general standing of the leadership of Putin, I think undeniably has taken a hit. But there is no evidence yet that he's about to fall, as far as I can tell. And China has spent most of the last generation considering itself to be quite expert on studying the former Soviet Union and today's Russia and thinking that it has solved the problems that Russia has brought upon itself, whether it was the dissolution of the Soviet Union or overreach militarily without strengthening your own economic base. And so I have a hard time applying the rationality of our analysis to what has happened with potential divisions, mutiny, and risk for Putin in overextension in this invasion, and hoping that that rationality has roots inside Beijing. So I think it would be nice if they faced that deterrent. I think it is very important that strategic communications make clear to Chinese people that there is no reason to have overconfidence about the capabilities of a very untested military force of theirs. And it would be risky to invade Taiwan. But I always have a high degree of caution of assuming that that rationality and deterrence will move from one theater into Beijing's mindset.
Gordon, you have a question for Steve.
Steve, just to speculate here, do you think that the Chinese political establishment in general, and Xi Jinping in particular, were surprised by the events of the weekend?
I assume they were surprised by them, but it's always possible that they had a hotline of communication with the Kremlin that was letting them in on whatever kind of operations there were here. There were several unusual moves in how that played out, in the sense that it seemed as though the insurgency was knocking on the door of Moscow, something that should have been very disturbing to Beijing, and seeing the military willing to take on political leadership, which also should be disturbing to Beijing, given that Xi Jinping is very openly arm in arm with Putin in recent years, this unlimited friendship. But the way it has gone since that moment appearing as though Moscow may fall, I think is just blurry enough for Beijing to kind of stay put. So I don't know that it has destabilized Xi or those around him. But I do think it was a surprise to them that this insurgency played out the way it did.
The Tunisian Revolution, the Arab Spring, it is not speculation, it is fact that it was sometimes called the Jasmine Revolution. And I recall the word jasmine, the whole idea of jasmine tea, was momentarily, perhaps still, verboten in Beijing and throughout China's reach, and that the Chinese Communist Party very much blanched at the idea that there could be something signaling revolt. Now, this is before Xi took power. I believe it was the last year of Hu Jintao. Is that a model that we can apply today, that the Chinese leadership blinks hard when there's a disruption, and especially a disruption in a part of the world that it believes is certain in the hands of strongmen?
Yeah, well, I definitely see these as cautionary tales. I think, and the color revolutions is something that they were very disturbed by and applied a lot of time to study, because they wanted to avoid any hint of something like that gaining steam inside the People's Republic of China. The difference between the Arab Spring and the dissolution of Soviet Union is that Beijing has, in the intervening time under Xi Jinping, purged a lot of questionable military leaders, imposed the world's most comprehensive and advanced surveillance state. And I think that there is a degree of confidence in Beijing that they have the levers of control to tamp these things down before they could do something similar in China. Those very likely could be famous last words, because these things could have an inertia of their own. And the Communist Party has to know that there are so many more people outside of the party that once they ever got any momentum or confidence behind them, the party has no chance but to crumble.
Gordon, I incompletely remember Bao Xilai, the 14th Army, and events that pointed to disruption in the Chinese military loyalty of the Chinese Communist Party. Can you recover that for me? What happened then?
Yeah, Bao Xilai, who was party secretary of Chongqing, when he knew that he was in trouble with the political leadership in Beijing itself, he then went over to, I think it was Chengdu, to the headquarters of the 14th Army Group, which was in the past led by his father. And I think that was the triggering event for Xi Jinping to say that it was no longer permissible for Bo to stay in power. So he was removed as party secretary of Chongqing, and he was given a life imprisonment for corruption. And his wife, of course, was also given a life imprisonment term for, I think, the murder of a British citizen.
So what we had there was the question raised about the PLA being loyal. That's what that incident means.
Yes, and this is something which plays upon the fears of every Chinese leader, because this goes back to 1971, when Lin Biao, who was Mao's designated successor and who was head of the army, attempted a coup. Mao found out about it, was able to arrange for Lin's plane to fall from the skies as Lin was fleeing. And this has scarred Chinese leaders since that time. They've always worried about the control of what they call the gun.
And Steve, are we looking then at China having solved this problem? What have they done that solved the problem of a disloyal military commander?
Yeah, I don't think they have solved this problem. I think they are at risk of these things playing out. They have, in their own way, built up these tools to monitor and have had the demonstration effect of taking out very senior and powerful people when they have been found to fall out of line. And so I think they see this as an effort of constant gardening. It's one of those things where at some level they have to know that they're in an illegitimate house of cards. And so they have to continue to weed this garden and prune these branches in order to to stay in power, but they don't have the legitimacy to be able to weather these kinds of storms without forcefully putting down the risk. So I do think that they remain at risk of these kinds of things, but it will take a lot of courage, and it will take one of these things breaking through with some degree of impunity before they're politically at risk in Beijing.
Gordon, you have a question for Steve.
Steve, is there anything that the United States or another country can do to play upon the fears of Xi Jinping of a military revolt? And is this something that we should try to do?
I think it is something we should try to do. And I would put it, I've always advised our top leaders, whenever they care to listen, that we should just simply put it in the form of questions. We should stop taking it as a given, as a lot of establishment China hands have for years, that the Communist Party is here to stay and that they are impervious and they've somehow cracked the code and they're delivering what the Chinese people want. We should ask the questions about, isn't China at risk of this kind of division and lack of support for the current leadership? Is Xi's bellicose rhetoric really supported by China's military? Aren't there rational minds and souls in that institution that would call it into question the way it appears to happen in other systems? What is it about the Chinese people that they would not be so blessed? We should have leaders who call those things into question. Unfortunately, we tend to have leaders who follow the tried and true talking points of the past two generations that basically soothe over these turbulent points for Beijing before they have to deal with it themselves.
And that would be Mr. Blinken you're referring to, Steve?
Unfortunately, it's not limited to Blinken or any Secretary of State. We have leaders in our own military that go to very establishment thinking Ivy League institutions for their training in international affairs and diplomacy. And they sort of drink from the same Kissingerian cup of pursuing dialogue and keeping stability. That is soothing sounds to China's military, and they use it to impose their power on their people, too.
Steve Yates, chair of the America First Policy Institute's China Policy Initiative, Gordon Chang. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.